The Nonprofits, or at least I think I am. I'm supposedly your host, Dennis Loubet, along with Matt Dillahunty, Schilling, and the indomitable Russell Glasser.
Mm-hmm.
But I really have no way of knowing that. My senses could be lying to me and feeding me the illusion that we're broadcasting live from the Dillahunty International Studios in Austin, Texas, on the 26th of July, 2008, and maybe what I perceive as God by Tori Amos is in fact a sinister fiction impressed on my mind by persons unknown for obscure reasons. True, it looks like this show is sponsored by the atheist community of Austin, but for that to be true, I have to trust my senses are uncompromised and that the ACA is in reality a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state. Now, I could attempt to find inconsistencies that would show it's all fake by calling the voicemail at 512-371-2911 or by visiting the website at www.atheist-community.org, but what conclusion could I draw from the experiment, even if I did find an inconsistency? That I'm right and the universe is a lie, or that the organizations are often inconsistent? Is the knowledge that the ACA hosts a happy hour at the Dog and Duck on Thursday evenings at 7 just the result of some consistent and predictable nature of reality? Or is it some matrix-like simulation designed to keep me sedated? In fact, the whole idea that the nonprofits broadcasts live every other Saturday from 2 to 3:30 Central Time, or that you could join the chat room by following the instructions at www.nonprofitsradio.com, seems ludicrous on the face of it. This is all nonsense. There will be no one sitting back and listening to the show because there is no show and no one else exists. They're all a figment of my imagination.
Dennis disappeared. Where'd you go?
That was the darndest thing.
I could have sworn there was somebody else in the room.
Okay, well, that was a real muck of an intro.
it really does tie into the types of questions that we get in email all the time. And, you know, I'm a kind of masochistic son of a bitch when it comes to email, in that I'll answer stuff that other people will ignore.
Yes, and I did not complete the introductions. We have another with us.
Oh, yeah, Thad's with us again, yes. Although he doesn't have a mic because, well, for the same reason that we don't have the lapel mics and for the same reason that not everybody's got headphones on, it's because I'm just evidently lazy.
I write these intros before I know who's going to show up.
Sorry, Thad.
That's the way it goes.
Proving once again, we aren't prophets.
I actually considered not showing up, in which case you'd have a microphone, so blame me.
Then I'd be really hosed.
Trust me,
Thad.
Trust me, when Thad starts bouncing around going, you can just hand him a microphone and he'll spit it out. Yeah, so, you know, I answer emails from people all the time, and every time I'm in a real discussion or lengthy discussion with a theist, it follows one of a couple very predictable patterns.
Uh-huh.
To the point where, and I feel bad for doing this because it looks like I'm not actually paying attention. When I am, I read everything and I try to respond point for point, but I often include things in my answers to pre-Trump the nonsense that they're going to spew later.
Uh-huh.
And without fail, they spew it anyway.
Yep.
And I can say, I answered this 3 emails ago before you ever said it. But when you get a theist who is at least willing to have a conversation and be honest, in every single instance that that's occurred, you get down to a point where either, one, they say, well, I actually don't have any evidence and I don't have any reason that would justify my belief to anybody else. This is a personal thing that I accept on faith. Great. If you'd have just frickin' admitted that at the outset, you could have saved us both a lot of time.
Yep.
Because number one, I'm not just going to accept anything on faith. And number two, you are writing to me because I don't believe when your reasons for belief don't apply to me. And not just because I don't accept things on faith, but because I don't have this kind of special revelation that you claim to have.
Yep.
If you're really concerned, then what you should do is, if you believe this and you think prayer works, hit your knees and pray that your God will reveal himself to me in the same way that he revealed himself to you, so that it's clear.
Yeah, that would be better than you starting to retreat towards solipsism. You know, it's like...
You know what Daniel Dennett said about this line of argument in, what was it, Darwin's Dangerous Idea?
Mm-hmm.
He said, when somebody starts arguing with you that the proof doesn't have to be based on reason, then you say, oh, well, that means your God is a ham sandwich wrapped in tinfoil. And if they complain about that, then you say, oh, I see. Now you want to use logic to argue against that. So you just want to play tennis without a net when you're serving, but you want the net put back up when I return.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's nice. The other way that these typically end up is they'll do something akin to your intro, which is to say that – to go into this bullshit stuff about absolute certainty and proof. It happens all the time.
Uh-huh.
The other aspect of that is to rely on uncertainty and the possibility – this could possibly be true. Wouldn't you want to risk it? And that's how you get to Pascal's wager and other nonsense. Mm-hmm. But this idea that – You can't know without this kind of absolute certainty is one that I can't believe the number of times I've hammered on this. And it usually is followed by something along the lines, and sometimes they start with this, that atheism is a faith or just like their belief, because we have our own presuppositions that, for example, the natural world's all that exists. Okay, stop. No, that's naturalism, and it's not necessarily the case for all atheists. It happens to be true for me. However, let's look at this a little bit differently. It's not that I've got a preconception that necessarily precludes the idea of a God. My preconceptions are based on evidence and reason that there would be a way to demonstrate reality. That's the preconception, that what I perceive about reality is generally reliable. The Christian and I both agree that the natural world exists pretty much the way we understand it, and we're constantly improving it. They're taking an extra step and adding a whole supernatural world that they can't demonstrate. And to say that we're on equal footing because we both have this preconception. No. We both buy into the natural world.
We both agree.
You're glomming some crap on it to compensate for your own fears, insecurities, your uncomfortable with your ignorance, and that's where we end up.
They try to frame the position as asserting that naturalism is the only thing that exists, that nature's all we have. And that's rarely quite accurate. Usually it's more that nature is the only thing that we know exists. And there's a strong difference there. You're not ruling out anything else. You're just requiring it to establish itself.
Nature is the only thing that we can do tests on and see, and verify that it exists.
Right.
Yep.
Robert Pennock had a distinction that he drew in Tower of Babel, which was about the intelligent design movement, where he said that there's a difference between philosophical naturalism, which is the denial that anything exists but the natural world. It's sort of an underlying philosophy that naturalism is all there is.
Right.
And what science uses, which is methodological naturalism, mm-hmm. which is there may be more to the universe than natural stuff. But as long as we can't figure out what that is, it doesn't mean anything to our methods.
So we wanted to, I guess, mention this real quick. For those of you who aren't listening live, we didn't start at the appropriate time today.
That's right.
I got stuck working. So on very short notice, we postponed the show 2 hours. So instead of starting at 2 Central, we started at 4.
Working on the Sabbath.
Somebody's Sabbath. I'm always working
Stone on him.
Heretic. But Despite that, I noticed that the chat room is as full as ever, and that we have once again maxed out the server for live listeners.
Wow.
So thanks to folks for shifting the time to stick around and listen live.
Is it about time for us to, like, Hector the ACA to pay for one of those larger service accounts so that we can get more people in here?
I don't think so. And the reason for that is while we kind of peg out the number of people listening live, it's not like the chat room is overflowing with people saying, I want to listen live, but I can't.
And well, how early does the stream fill up? Does it fill up like right at the time the show starts, or does it fill up like 20 minutes before? Because then you know you've kind of got a problem.
No, it fills up gradually over the first 5 or 10 minutes of the show.
Oh, okay. We got some buffer then.
Yeah. And given the price of kind of restreaming, it's really tuned. They tune their price structure to somebody who's going to do a show all the time. And doing a show every other week doesn't make it cost effective. Now, if we were doing, you know, a short podcast every week or twice a week, then it might be more effective to look into that streaming stuff. But from the email we get, I think most people want to listen non-live.
You're going to make people salivate with that kind of talk.
You know, I had some more thoughts about sort of meta show business that were brought on by Joss Whedon's great, great online musical, Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog. Anybody mind if I talk about that for a minute? Because
knock yourself out.
It has a little bit. It has nothing to do with atheism, but it has some things.
Well, yeah, it does. Because
Joss
is an atheist.
Joss is an atheist.
There is the tenuous kind of link right there.
Yeah. So many of us are fans of Joss Whedon's work. Joss being a writer director who's behind Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Firefly, among other things.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also a real big voice in activism while the writer's strike was going on. He wrote this great essay about how people don't see writers as real workers. And it was very good and sarcastic and made me think, boy, if you're going to get in a battle of verbal wits with somebody, you really don't want to do it against somebody who does it for a living.
That's right.
So during the writer's strike, Joss Whedon was trying to come up with this idea of how we could use the internet to make money off of something creative without going through this intermediary of a studio, which I'm all for, and that's why I'm planning to buy the DVD, just to lend my voice of support and dollars.
Sure.
The idea of Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog, which was a supervillain musical starring Neil Patrick Harris and Nathan Fillion, who was the captain on Firefly, the idea being that you generate word-of-mouth buzz about this internet project, and then you get a bunch of people to show up and watch it, like Joss Whedon said, like an old-time TV event where everybody's watching their TVs at the same time. You release it in episodes, and then you remove it from the internet and say, from now on, you got three ways to express your support. You can pay a small amount on iTunes. You can buy the full-length DVD, which we promise will have lots of cool special features. Or you can buy our merchandise, so you can now buy, like, Captain Hammer shirts.
Right, but of course it will be available as bootleg everywhere.
Yeah, it could, but that's true of real TV shows,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
That's true of real TV shows,
so
too.
It's the people who want the show better support the show.
Right.
Right.
It's hard to gauge, though, how you're going to rate the success of an experiment like that, because it's not just viral, you know, internet phenomena. It's Joss Whedon.
It's
he has
Joss
a
Whedon,
huge, who, dedicated, built-in fan
base. To be fair, he built up his fan base by going the traditional way, which is to have lots of shows syndicated by the very evil corporations that he was arguing against. But the idea, and he knows that.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, he wanted to, like, create sort of a project that was maybe a proof of concept about... He doesn't know whether the show will make money. He's self-financing it, and he got the actors to work for free until there's profits to give them.
So that's why Neil Patrick Harris is in it.
Patrick, yeah.
Oh, Patrick Harris, rather, sorry.
Yes.
Because he was willing to work for free.
Pretty much.
Hey.
He's on a hit sitcom.
I'd work for Joss Whedon for free. Once.
I would too.
I don't know cool. that I'd pay Neil Patrick Harris to work. But
he was awesome.
He was very
awesome.
Good, yes.
He sings well, and he played the part well.
Well, I haven't seen it, so.
And
well, yeah. We'll show you the DVD sometime when it comes out.
But, you know, you won't like it.
Probably.
Yeah. We knew that before it ever came out.
Let's show Mikey. He hates everything.
So, is the nonprofits ever going to make money? I mean, not...
Oh, wow!
Not profit, because, you know, that would violate the show and our sponsor. But, I mean, you know, the ACA can take money. They just can't take it as
we
profit.
We could take donations, and people could donate because of the show.
Okay.
But yep. That's all I know of.
Churches sell merchandise, don't they?
Well, we can and do accept donations, and people who listen to the shows have provided donations. We have actually ACA members who don't live in Austin, because that was one of the easiest ways to support the group. So there are ACA members all around the world because of what we listen to. We used cool. to, the ACA used to sell products.
Right, yeah.
T-shirts, okay. Bumper stickers, blah, blah, blah.
But they sold them locally at meetings.
No, they were for sale on the website.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, you don't have all that. Back then, there weren't all that many ACA members out in different places around the world. And now we have, like, listeners who are from everywhere.
Yeah.
Right.
And
can I get to the next part now?
Okay.
So we used to sell T-shirts and bumper stickers and coffee cups. They didn't sell particularly well, and the problem was we had to keep an inventory. So what we did was we canceled that. The ACA is currently only selling compilation CDs of the audio from the different shows, as well as DVDs of individual TV shows. And I'm building a new site. It won't be Cafe Press, but it's something similar to Cafe Press, where we can put
that,
up...
That guy who sold the Teach the Controversy shirts had an interesting site that apparently has a different model, and the shirts were pretty reasonably priced. Go on.
Yeah. So we've already picked out the site.
Okay.
I'm just not giving the name today because it's not ready.
Right.
But it's a way where we can put up images, cool. And we can even use, like, you know, listener-created images and stuff. Some people have done that. They've done new website graphics for, like, the Atheist Experience TV show and little labels for the podcast and stuff. The problem is that in addition to being president of the ACA, host of the Atheist Experience, one of the voices on the nonprofits, I have, I don't know how many committees, and products is one of my committees. And I'm working 10 to 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. The good news is that they may actually be getting ready to offer me a full-time position. So, but anyway, I'm swamped. So there are things that I just haven't been able to get to. Now, if there's some wonderful listener who's also an ACA member.
Yes.
Who would
and,
like
and
to...
And I would add that you can become a paid member without living in Austin.
Yes. Who would like to help get the product stuff up and running, especially some of those creative types who have done T-shirts for themselves and things, well, drop me an email. Maybe we can talk about it. But anyway, let's enough pimping money.
Yeah. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah. I would like to – we're operating kind of in the red and pretty much have been. One of the things the board's been talking about is balancing budgets and doing, you know, fundraisers and that type of thing because
– ugh.
All the activities we're doing, and by the way, it's a good time to mention the activities. We're doing Putt-Putt August 15th at Peter Pan downtown. It's BYOB.
Because who wants to play mini golf sober?
Yes.
That's right.
The Bat Cruise is in September. We're taking a trip to the San Antonio Zoo
in September, I think.
There's also some other stuff going on, and possibly another Godless Pub Crawl in the fall, which reminds me. And I'm going to go ahead and do this on the air.
Uh-oh.
How many people in this room aren't actually paid members of the ACA right now?
I think I am.
I have no idea.
I think there are two who aren't.
Oops.
and
you
we'll
hate that.
And we'll be correcting it.
Okay.
Later on. So anyway, I figure I'm just going to embarrass people publicly from now on.
That's fine.
It's worked so
That's
well.
That's fine. It works.
Dennis hasn't paid
All
yet.
All you have to do is ask.
I know. It's easy to
I
forget.
I never remember.
Somebody
you
brought
have to
it up.
Ask.
Somebody brought it up at a meeting the other day, and I was like, I'll make sure. It'll happen. So what's
now
been going on outside of ACA and money crap this weekend, past 2 weeks?
Let's see. How did he phrase it? It is done. It is finished.
Yeah, if he didn't say it is finished, he damn sure should have.
It is finished. Yes, PZ Myers did his thing with the Eucharist. And it constituted stabbing a rusty nail through a Eucharist and throwing it in the trash along with pages from the Koran and the God delusion.
How dare he?
Indeed. I'm offended.
He's been on this show. How could he do something like that? I'm going to fucking kill him.
That guy should be fired.
And then there were banana peels and coffee grounds.
Yeah, the atheist nightmare laying right on top of it I thought was a nice touch. Yeah. Although I think it may have been accidental. I didn't see him mention that in there, but...
And the post that went along with it was
that was
beautiful.
The jewel.
Yes.
That was the gem. Go to Ferengula and read the post on that.
Yeah, it is
astounding.
Because not only did he talk about the desecration, but he led in with this great intro about the history of desecrating the Eucharist,
yes,
which led to a lot of Jew burnings.
Huge pogroms, yes. Yeah. It's so much blood shed over fucking crackers. God.
Now we need to be precise. It's wafers.
Wafers. Yeah.
And of course, oh, by the way.
No, I'm not going to give it the respect of calling it a wafer.
Warren Cook.
Because I've had Nilla wafers, and those are way better than
that. Oh, yeah.
Stuff.
That's right.
But somebody told me when I did the Cooking Good show last week, which I'm not sure when it'll air, maybe next Tuesday, but they're going to work on it, may be further down the line, they're going to work on getting it up on the internet, and I'll send out a link. I don't think I was particularly good or funny, so you may not want to waste your time. But one of the hosts mentioned that they actually take communion wafers or the equivalent in Mexico and put caramel between them and sandwich it. So it's just a way to eat caramel.
Cool.
Yeah. So I'm glad I got wafers.
It's like holy Oreos.
They have an overabundance of wafers there.
Apparently.
Well, when 98% of your population's Catholic, I imagine it's like mass market wafers.
One of the big points in PZ's post was nothing is sacred.
Yeah.
Hence the inclusion of the pages from the God delusion.
Yep.
No one can accuse him of bias, It's like question everything.
Yeah, it was actually a good move for a couple of reasons. I would think that it would open somebody's eyes to this idea that nothing's sacred, that you should question everything, that, Dawkins is a brilliant man, a scientist. He's revered generally among the broader atheist community as a generally good spokesman. He's not always right. We don't follow him dogmatically. When he's wrong, we'd say he's wrong. And absolutely nothing he says is sacred. And Dawkins would be the first one to tell you that.
That's right.
Well, and along with the more intangible things like that, as far as questioning everything, it also highlights it's fucking paper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't destroy the ideas. Everything is fine. It is nothing but a symbol.
Yeah. Now, people expressed, reluctance at, likening it to book burning, of course. But no. When you're doing book burning, you're trying to eliminate the book, Book burning is an attempt to eliminate an idea. P.Z. Myers was not attempting to eliminate an idea.
Except that I don't
know. He was making a statement, and that's it.
I don't know that modern book burnings could actually be viewed as an attempt to eliminate the idea. I think it's,
right, I think it's
more ceremonial. And
at this point, it's always just a matter of political speech or statement.
Mm.
Well, it's the equivalent of flag burning.
Yeah.
And the thing about flag burning, and I know we talked about this years ago, I'm not sure who was around then, when you know, when they were trying to make an amendment that would prevent flag burning, the flaw in that idea was that they had this very specific flag of what is a flag and what kind of dimensions does it have how big the stars are. So you could, even if this law had passed, make your own flag, and when somebody says, hey, you can't burn that, it's against the law, you say, no, look, this 37th star here is off-white. So this is not a real flag, according to the law. Or you could make something that looks just like a flag, except all the colors are inverted on the color wheel. So you've got, like, magenta stripes or something.
So their efforts to outlaw a specific thing backfire.
Right. So it would pass the legal test, but it wouldn't pass the redneck test, which is, would you get punched if you burned
in
front of somebody? I think, you know, same thing with the wafer.
Redneck test. I like that.
I think that from personal experience, the modern book burnings are not necessarily – well, they know that they can't eliminate ideas entirely, but the intent in many cases is to eliminate the idea from a group of people. In other words, their insular group. They want to remove these particular ideas from anyone that they consider part of their group. And that was from personal experience. My parents' church had a couple they didn't actually have burnings, but they gathered together rock music, evil books, and threw them away in a big ceremony. And the idea was, let's eliminate these secular, evil, unacceptable ideas from any, especially from our children. Generally, it was trying to protect the children from access to these ideas. In my personal experience, for example, my dad burned a copy of H.G. Wells, the complete works of H.G. Wells. And, of course, the long-term effect was he became one of my favorite authors.
Yeah.
Right.
Those people must hate the internet with a passion.
Oh.
Because it doesn't matter how many copies of a book you burn, you can still find it on the internet.
Yeah, that
Well, perhaps technology will someday advance to where we can blog burn.
Yeah. Actually, I'd kind of enjoy that with some blogs.
Yeah. Well, once upon a time, I mean, this is something that I thought about ages ago. Once upon a time, before we had mass communications, before we had printing and other things like that, you could pretty much stamp out not just an idea, but actual knowledge using these methods.
Oh, the Library of
Alexandria.
Yeah, that was the example I was going to use, and we're all familiar with it. There's no telling how much we've lost or how long it took us to make up ground, because I don't know that there was anything in the library that we haven't rediscovered. I don't think that's likely.
I'm sure there was.
But it certainly slowed us down.
Yeah.
You know, it's like people complaining about, you know, there's plans for nuclear weapons on the internet. Okay, the genie's already out of the bottle. You can't eliminate that knowledge. And I think we're at the point now with the internet, mass communications, in the modern world, where the only effective way to eliminate knowledge would be to eradicate the population. What's not going to survive in some form? I mean, there may be knowledge that we could, that other people wouldn't understand, like as something that is, you know, if we killed all the people who are working on string theory stuff.
Right.
It might take us a long time to get any kind of progress. It might take us a long
Back
time to get any kind of progress.
We might
anyway.
Go in a different direction.
Right. You know. Plus, I don't think people would be too eager to go into the field of string theory soon.
Yeah. And so
good point.
But eliminating, like burning all the books, even if you could gather up every paper copy of, you know, the God Delusion, for example, and burn them all.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't really accomplished anything, because the meme is already out. The content exists in non-paper format.
Sure.
And the book has already touched the lives of enough people.
Millions.
To where all of those ideas will come back out.
Right.
And it helps to have the author who could rewrite it.
Yeah, but I'm assuming that, you know, they burned him on a stake surrounded by his books. I'm sorry, Richard.
Wow, the hypotheticals keep getting more gruesome.
But But trust me, even if that happened, somebody could rewrite, let's say, the Ultimate 747, almost verbatim, or at least close enough to where it matters. I don't – these kind of ceremonial book burnings, I kind of agree with Thad that a lot – some of the reason behind it is to promote an insular society.
Right.
And another reason for it is obviously to make some kind of statement. But I don't know that any of them – I think it's why we don't see so many of them anymore. They're just not effective in
– when I don't know if it's that because they stopped – they seemed to scale back quite a bit when public opinion thought that it was extremely tacky and distasteful. And I think that probably put an end to it before the technology really advanced to where it was – they would consider it pointless.
Yeah. Now, going back to Russell's point on flag burnings, you know, I can't count the number of times somebody's tried to stick an amendment. I think even McCain's supporting an amendment on flag burning.
Oh, probably. McCain will support anything that
panders to someone.
Thinks, well, yeah.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't know what the other candidates' positions are on flag burning. I have no immediate interest or desire to burn a flag. But the second they make it unconstitutional to burn a flag, I'm burning flags.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, pretty much.
Statement. I appreciate my country. I'm not blindly patriotic. My country is not perfect, and currently we're a bunch of fuck-ups. But I enjoy the freedoms here, and when we start giving in to fear-mongering under the guise of blind patriotism to steal away freedoms, that's the kind of law that I think you have to oppose.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so I'd be burning flags.
I like what Carlin said. He said he considers the flag a symbol, and he leaves symbols to the simple-minded.
Nice.
Any more news?
That's good.
I'm sure we have more news.
Well, we have some news. We have a story about Allah's meat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it got measurements? Or?
Yeah.
Was Allah hung like a Shetland?
I don't know. Let's see here. Diners have been flocking to a restaurant in northern Nigeria to see pieces of meat, which the owner says are inscribed with the name of Allah. What looks like the Arabic word for God and the name of the Prophet Muhammad were discovered in pieces of beef by a diner in Burnin Kebbi.
Wasn't pork, was it? Because that'd be...
I was about to say that's what
would
we need.
No, would be
to
nice,
do.
Wouldn't
to
it?
Find out what it looks like. Slaughter as many pigs as we have to until it turns up. And then just ship it over.
He was about to eat it when he suddenly noticed the words in the gristle, the restaurant owner said. A search of the kitchen's meat revealed three more pieces which bore the names. The meat was boiled and then fried before being served. Owner Kibiru Hiliru told newspaper
Nobody thought
Weekly
to check
Trust.
The grill or
Apparently
whatever they're using.
Not. When the writings were discovered, there were some Islamic scholars who come and eat here, and they all commented that it was a sign to show that Islam is the only true religion for mankind. So, words on meat mean Allah is real.
That's awesome.
So when someone asks, how do I know your God's the right God? Their correct response is, has yours put its signature inside a cow.
Do you have a piece of meat with God's name on it? No. Yeah. Well, then your religion isn't true.
So they found three pieces of meat. I do wonder if they came from the same cow or not.
I think that's the case.
I still think it's got something to do with the grill.
No,
but no it could be
well,
the
no,
grill.
No, yeah, I saw,
it's the fat marbling.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I saw
so
a picture of
it,
and
slices.
It's this kind of reticulated, you know, marbling in the thing, and... Heck, if you can spell out your God's name in just random reticulation, it's going to appear everywhere in nature, okay?
Yeah. Well, I just love the idea of a God who's sitting up there saying, I can't reveal myself to people because that would violate their free will, but I need more followers. What am I going to do now? I know. Meat.
Meat. It's what's for dinner.
It's not even like it's something that could have been obvious in general. It's not like the God would have, you know, written his name on the meat after it was butchered. He wrote it on the inside of a cow.
Right.
Yeah. Allah, the other red meat. Right. It's like
he also did a really bad job of writing. It doesn't. It's really hard to.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't.
Well,
read
come
that,
on now.
So
how can you write your name in the marbled fat of an animal?
I mean,
It can't be easy. The thing's moving around. It's fucking alive.
Well, the restaurant has kept the pieces of meat for visitors to see.
Yes. For how long, can I ask?
Thousands of people have already gone to the restaurant to see them since they were discovered last week. A vet told the newspaper the words, "defied scientific explanation." I have an explanation. Pareidolia.
I'm tempted to get my penis tattooed with that Allah signature there so that I'll have a piece of meat with God's name on it. This will prove once and for all that Islam is the one true. Yeah, every time they do this, and this isn't the first time, and it's not the first religion. This stuff comes up, and whether it's, you know, the fat of a cow or Christ on a cracker or the Virgin Mary on some glass.
Or grilled cheese sandwich.
It's, this is clear evidence that our religion is the one true right religion.
We've got to keep this story on file somewhere. Because
maybe there are multiple gods.
People do occasionally call in and say, how do you explain this weird thing that I saw? And so I think the only answer to that is, how do you explain this piece of meat?
Yeah.
Well, they used to see Jesus on things like crackers. Then you got a grilled cheese sandwich. Now you have some steak. It seems like there could be multiple gods, and they're just trying to one-up each other.
Nice.
So for anyone in the Maryland area, for example, start checking the crabs or lobsters. That's probably the next step.
Yeah.
A lobster thermidor with a portrait of L. Ron Hubbard. Sue me, you Scientologist fucks.
The name of Jesus and a duck l'orange on the...
and a sauce béarnaise.
Rat
au vin.
For you or black lobster caravans. Thermidor or crevettes with brandy fried egg on top, Allah's name and spam.
There you go. And speaking of Python, another news story. A reader, the Red Ferret, alerted us to the fact that the movie Life of Brian has been banned in the city of, or the town of, and I'm going to horribly mangle the name, Aberystwyth?
Watch our, five listeners in Aberystwyth.
Well,
right
our listeners in England will probably just go ape.
I've been to England. Let me see the name.
Okay. It's...
Yeah, let's just give 30 seconds.
Aberystwyth.
Okay.
And that's probably wrong, too. But
Mayor Sue Jones-Davies is trying to overturn a 30-year ban imposed by the town on Monty Python's Life of Brian, the film in which she played a role. And, I might add, quite a hot role.
See, I don't think I'd use the word hot.
No?
She was the average-looking girl who got butt-naked, full
average?
Frontal.
Nah, not with that jawline. Oh. Okay, I'm weird.
Right.
What can I say? So,
we won't go into Dennis's proclivities. So yeah, she was in the movie, and now she's the mayor of a town where that movie's been banned for 30 years.
Right.
That's kind of amusing, yeah.
And long before she donned the mayoral robes.
And I have to say, based on her recent pictures.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah.
Not at all hot.
Oh, come on now.
Strong face.
Definitely a strong face. Yeah. Yeah. Barbara Bush has a strong face, too. But
No.
Nah, stop picking on her.
Man.
All right.
She's the mayor, and she's trying to do something good. Yeah. Something that should have been done, I don't know, 31 years ago.
That's true. Sorry, Sue.
Let's see. Given what's on TV now, I think it's amazing a ban in Aberystwyth still exists, said Mrs. Jones-Davies. I think
Splitter!
It should be lifted. I would like to think that any religion would have the generosity to see the film for what it is. And, my response
to this I think they did see
was,
the film for what it is.
My response to this was, you mean there's a politician pushing for release of her naked pictures?
Yeah.
I'm going, wow, that's guts.
Yeah, I'm mayor of this town now, and I'd really like you all to see what I look like when I was younger.
That's right.
So let's let this ban on this film.
There's the question of has the ban been enforced in any reasonable way.
Apparently it hasn't been, it hasn't been played in the town since the ban was.
I would imagine that, and I don't know because I don't live there, I would imagine that it hasn't been shown in any theater in the town and probably isn't available for video rental in the town.
Right.
Probably.
But would there be like a personal ban like they did with the Video Nasties where if you're caught with a copy in your home?
Oh, probably not. I can't imagine it's that draconian. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine, you know, if they did a search of your house for something else and stumbled across your copy of...
Well, I don't know. If it wasn't available in the video stores and it wasn't able to play in the theaters, anyone brings in a copy, you're going to have plenty of people in that town gathering in parties to watch Life of Brian all the damn time, I would think.
You know what I'd have done? I would have set up a drive-in theater on the edge of town where the screen could be viewed from town. And I'd have played Life of Brian every night for 30 years.
I'm glad to know your money is worth that much to you.
There's all kinds of things I'd do if I had unlimited wealth, which means you should all buy me lottery tickets and send them.
Because that's right. If everybody, you need unlimited wealth.
You know what? Oh, never mind.
Okay, another story. Church cancels teen gun giveaway.
Now, this is sad. I was heartbroken because I remember when I was going to church and they gave us... Oh, no, wait.
Oklahoma City, only in Oklahoma. An Oklahoma church canceled a controversial gun giveaway for teenagers at a weekend youth conference.
Now, who'd have thought this would be controversial?
Yeah, really.
I can see how they were taken by surprise.
Windsor Hills Baptist had planned to give away
It's not like they were selling ammo.
Give away a semi-automatic assault rifle until one of the event's organizers was unable to attend. The church, I wonder if he was shot. Anyway, the church's youth pastor, Bob Ross, said, "It's a way of trying to encourage young people to attend the event. The church expected hundreds of teenagers from as far away as Canada. We have 21 hours of preaching and teaching throughout the week." I could just see this Canadian trying to get the gun back across the Canadian border. That would be rich.
This must have been one of those books that didn't make the Bible, you know.
Yeah.
One of the ways to teach thy brethren about the goodness and virtue of the Lord is grab them whilst they are young and provide them with weapons of terrible...
semi-automatic assault rifles.
It's ridiculous at face value when you consider, you know, they're giving guns to teens at a church camp. That seems ridiculous, but feasibly it could be defended. Right. Well, when you consider that someone had... to spawn that fucking idea. How do we get kids into the pews? You know,
let's see.
The rock music? Do we, you know, have a dance? Weapons.
Right. Jesus, semi-automatic assault rifle. Jesus, semi-automatic assault rifle. Ah, I just don't know. I don't want people thinking, my goodness, we're putting a weapon in the hands of somebody that doesn't respect it, who are then going to go out and kill, said Ross. That's not at all what we're trying to do.
Yeah, we're giving them to teenagers.
That's right.
Yeah.
They don't have hormones. No. They never get angry.
We're giving
them
to teenagers who were so rational that they were conned into coming to listen to us preach so they could accept Jesus in order to get their automatic weapon.
21 hours of preaching and teaching.
Yeah.
Got to throw in a trench coat for that much.
Ross,
I think there should be a federal law that says if you've endured 21 hours of preaching from any religion, you're not allowed to touch a weapon for a week until after you've talked to a counselor.
That's right. Ross said the conference isn't all about guns, but rather about teens finding faith.
Were they giving away
and
just
guns.
One gun as
apparently
like a prize,
so.
Or was it guns to like all of
no,
them?
No, no.
The impression that I got is that it was like one gun.
That would
like
be great if you gave it to everyone. Then we'll celebrate in the traditional method of firing
Crossfire.
Rounds into the air. You know, that would be great. Ross said the church would give the gun away next year instead. He said the church spent $800 buying the gun for the promotion.
Yeah, it won't be controversial after a year.
No, no, no. Jesus accepts guns next year. That's
we're,
fine.
We're going to rig the raffle drawing to make sure that the preacher's son gets it. Because we've seen a lot of stories about preacher's kids, and they always turn out great.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the hope is that they'll be as enthusiastic as the Pentecostal snake handlers and decide that God will protect them no matter what they do. And so they'll, you know, suck on the barrel or, you know, look down in there, see if they can find the Lord.
That'd be great.
Shoot each other in the ass.
If you're crazy enough to give out an automatic or semi-automatic weapon, or let's just say any weapon,
sure,
as the raffle prize to a bunch of teens that you're trying to convince to buy into your religion, if you have that much faith, then what you should do is take the weapon first, kneel down with a couple of other Christians, and pray that God protect you from the bullet while you place it next to your temple and pull the trigger.
Sure.
If that happens, I think I'd be probably you'd be okay with giving it away as a prize.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, your God's got some mojo.
But only if you call a press conference so we can watch.
Oh, and by the way, it actually has to be loaded when you do that.
Oh, yeah.
Are you talking roulette, like one chamber, or fully loaded?
Just a rifle, one chambered round. Anyway,
well,
don't actually do it.
It doesn't like, kind of work on an automatic.
Well, yeah. That's true.
No, one chambered
round.
Yeah. But anyway, don't actually do it. I mean, I realize there's somebody out there who's saying, I'll show that atheist. Monkey Man will teach you, Mr. Skeptic.
Don't do it.
I think they should. I want people, anyone who's dumb enough to fall for that, I'm misanthropic, but I hope they go through.
Uh-huh. They're not listening to the nonprofits.
Yeah.
I hate to break it to you.
I'm not so sure.
Okay.
If you're out there, send us an email.
Do you have a counterexample?
We get mail. We have some theists who listen to us to spy on what the enemy's doing. As we are the godless armies of Satan, you know, in their view, they want to find out what we're up to.
They've got all the guns.
I know.
That's right.
So now...
I'm only a colonel so far.
I think at the September Bat Cruise for the ACA, we should have a raffle and give away... I can't think of anything funny right now.
Mm.
Shouldn't have started that then. Damn.
Well, here's something also that's not funny. The Nine Faces of Death in Iran. Nine-face stoning death in Iran. At least 8 women and 1 man are reported to have been sentenced to death by stoning in Iran. The group... convicted of adultery and sex offenses, could be executed at any time, lawyers defending them say. The lawyers have called on the head of Iran's judiciary to prevent the sentences from being carried out. The last officially reported stoning in Iran last year drew strong criticism from human rights groups and European Union.
You know, the way they set that up, you expect, you know, in 1972.
Yeah. Right, no, last year.
The last reported execution in the state of Texas... 3 days ago.
Right. The 8 women sentenced, whose ages range from 27 to 43, had convictions including prostitution, incest, and adultery, Reuters news agency reported. The man, a 50-year-old music teacher, was convicted of illegal sex with a student. So, women are poorly represented. In theory, the penalty of stoning to death applies to both men and women, but the lawyers say that in practice, many more women than men receive the sentence because they are less well-educated and often poorly represented in court. Human rights group Amnesty International...
And also women are evil. Don't forget that part.
Yes, and the men can't control themselves.
I've learned so much from Kafir Girl.
Oh, really?
And one of the first things I learned is that a woman is actually explicitly numerically worth half as much as a man.
Oh,
so actually you need...
The Quran is the only book that provides equal rights to women.
So actually you need to kill twice as many women to meet the same quota.
Oh, my God. Human rights group Amnesty International earlier this year called on Iran to abolish this grotesque punishment and said many facing execution by stoning were sentenced after unfair trials. Under Iran's strict penal code, men convicted of adultery should be buried up to their waists and women up to their chests for stoning.
Because we got to cover the tits.
The stones used should not be large enough to kill the person immediately.
Oh, yeah.
What a nice little
So we can't lug
addendum.
In the big rock, right? It's just like in Monty Python.
It would be cruel.
It's got to be
because you
slow,
gather an audience,
painful, and torturous.
Yeah, you gather an audience. It's there to see a show. You don't want it to be like a Tyson fight where you pay 60 bucks and see 3.5 minutes.
I'm glad it's the religion of peace.
Little pieces of rock.
Yes. So, yes, that was a sad little report.
Although we didn't treat it that way.
No.
No, well, this is, granted, it's sick and offensive, but we've heard in the past couple of months story after story after story where somebody is been accused of adultery or refused to go along with their arranged marriage, including like this 11-year-old or whatever who right. had to get a divorce.
Right.
Because the agreement was, we'll marry you to our daughter, but you can't have sex with us with her for a couple of more years. And he right. went ahead and did it.
Yep.
And so she has to be shamed and pay for a divorce to get away from this 11-year-old girl to get away from this, I don't know, 40-ish-year-old man who decided that since her family was dumb enough to marry her off and because their religion puts women as, I don't know, piles of usable cattle. Goo, that he could just go ahead and do it.
Do whatever he wanted.
Yeah, she's mine. Ooh, 11. She's hot. Well, and, I don't even get that.
We make light of this stuff because there's really not much else we can do about it right now except make it ridiculous in people's minds.
The show would otherwise consist of nothing but wailing and gnashing.
People accuse us of being more harsh on Christianity than on Islam, and one of the reasons that maybe we do that is because there's something we can do about it concretely.
Yeah.
And you know, when it comes to doing something about Islam, people might say, bomb the fuckers. But, you know, that takes out a lot of innocent people, too.
Yeah.
So that's not really constructive.
Yeah. Well, the other reason is that, you know, it's not as in our face. We're not – we don't hear about this all the time. We get bits and pieces of news, and of course, there's so much news, we can't always touch it. I think probably, you know, if I'm being honest, one of the reasons why I – try to at least inject something humorous in there is because this is incredibly depressing.
Yeah, it is.
It's frustrating that we can't do anything about it. It's frustrating that the governments of these – if this was – this couldn't possibly happen in the United States without just a horrible backlash. The
sure.
first time there's
we
a
hope.
Fucking honor killing on American soil, Islam is going to see a whole different face – from the American people.
I hope so.
Yeah. But we're frustrated. We can't do it. We got to rely on Amnesty International and other groups like that. You know, plus, I don't want to do a show where I'm, you know, depressed
angry,
and tearful.
Pissed off and depressed.
I'm angry. Don't get me wrong. First of all, married an 11-year-old but then had sex with her. I'm not opposed to castration, I think.
No.
Maybe that's an overreaction. I know that's not for everybody. I don't think I'm opposed to that.
Well, not in that case, no.
On this show, I think that, if anything, we give too much attention to Islam on a proportional basis.
That may be the case.
And I don't think it's too much, you know, just in general. But if you go by proportion, you know, the claim is always, why do you always pick on Christians? We pick on Islam. You know, Islam's what? Around... What percentage of the population is it?
In the United States?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's less than 1%. There's less than 1% of the population in the United States is even Jewish.
Yeah. So, I mean, if one out of 100 shows mentions Islam, quota filled.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's just depending on the way you frame it, because in reality there are as many Muslims in the world as Christians.
Close, yeah.
And so, you know, they're not local.
Right.
Well, you're basing it on population, and I think, anything, it should be based on threat and atrocity.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Maybe,
Christians aren't doing honor killings.
Yeah. I think it's fair to say that it follows the rule of gravity and falls off in interest with the square of the distance or something like
that. We're not going after those fucking Jainists, man.
And there's also a matter of what's going to be effective. I mean, if we just handle stories like this seriously with somber tones, it's not really going to do anything, because our audience pretty much is going to be in full agreement, and there's not really going to be anything of value that we're saying that they aren't already thinking, whereas humor is something that varies a little more person to person. And then even serious efforts like Amnesty
International. Plus, we're assuming we're funny, and I don't know that that's the case.
Yeah.
Amnesty International talking to Iran.
A question of our audience. I mean, I know we have at least one person who is a Muslim apostate. But I don't know how many of those we have.
Several.
Could be quite a few.
But I don't think it's a huge portion. We got a relatively decent sample. I think we have...
Hey, I got another story. Let's attack some Christians. What the heck?
Okay.
Yay.
Before we do that, We're not going to do this today.
Oh.
Russell's on the show tomorrow.
Okay.
Tomorrow we will be attacking atheists. Tomorrow really? We will be spending the,
on an individual basis.
Yes.
Attacking atheists.
Because
cool.
There are some atheists who have done and continue to do some incredibly stupid things.
Damage.
And when I point out stupid things that Christians do, and some Christian writes in and says, well, that doesn't represent me, or that's not true, blah, 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 blah. And I always go after him and say, then do something about it.
Yeah, speak out.
Don't sit on your ass and play kind of pseudo roadblock for Fred Phelps's nonsense.
Yeah.
Go out there on the news and say, this guy doesn't speak for any of us. I don't care that he claims to use the same label as we do. He doesn't represent me or my beliefs. And when you have more people doing that, then you have sitting quietly letting people like Phelps talk unchallenged, then, all right, I'll ease up on you a little bit. But as long as moderate Christians are running interference mm-hmm. for the fundamentalist whack jobs, you're part of the problem.
Yeah.
And it
you're
would be hypocritical. It would be hypocritical of me to not also turn that same eye towards atheists that are doing stupid things. And so tomorrow, we're going to do that.
Cool. All right.
But let's bash on Christians for a while.
All right. Well, let's see. Texas State Board of Education approves Bible course for high schools. Texas State Board of Education approves Bible course for high schools. Austin, the State Board of Education on Friday gave final approval to a rule establishing an elective Bible course for high schools, but the panel rejected the arguments of some members and key lawmakers and left it up to local school districts to design the classes. Oh, yeah,
shit.
That'll work.
Yeah, it's a huge mistake.
Was that supposed to be like a compromise?
Well, yes, it's a way yeah. for the school board to get this in without approving in a curriculum that would cause problems.
Right.
So they leave it up to the school so that now we have this wide variety of problems with no oversight.
Yeah.
Right.
Among those who urged the board to issue specific guidelines for the class was Representative Scott Hochberg, Democrat, Houston, who helped write the 2007 law. Dr. Hochberg warned that without specific guidance from the state, some schools would run afoul of the First Amendment requirement of religious neutrality for such classes.
No, I can't believe they would do that.
Let's go forward and do this right and not let the lawyers tell us what we have to do, Mr. Hochberg asked the board, citing the possibility of lawsuits if all school districts design their own courses. My interest is in keeping the focus on teaching kids and spending less money on lawsuits. But a majority of board members, including all seven aligned with social conservatives, said they preferred to adopt a general rule now and not get into the specifics of what will be taught in the classes.
Yeah, there's the problem's twofold. One is the way they're going about it.
That is insane.
Now, offering an elective... A Bible course elective is something that I'm not opposed to.
No.
Provided that the guidelines include that there's no proselytization, that it's the Bible as literature / pseudo-history, whatever. But what they've done, first of all, is mandated that schools have to offer this as an elective.
Yeah.
Every school in Texas now has to offer this as an elective. Well, this puts a burden on the school that may be unnecessary, and if nobody's actually taking the course...
I don't think that's the case. When they first talked about instituting the policy, they did have a bit in there that had a minimum number of students
right.
requesting the course.
All schools have to offer it,
right.
but if they don't get enough student, if they have like less than 10 students,
okay.
well,
they don't have to actually do the course.
It's the opposite.
Huh?
The course has to be available if students wish to take it, but it's not that they set up a course and cancel
that,
it if it doesn't get filled.
That was the first... Now they are putting the burden on the schools
okay.
to come up with a curriculum, which means the schools have to put in the effort to come up with some curriculum
mm-hmm.
and then offer it as an elective.
Okay.
And any school that doesn't do this is outside of the scope of what the State Board
mm-hmm.
of Education requires. That's part of the problem.
Yeah, their explanation for this bullshit is, it's better for us to go ahead and do something now, said board member Cynthia Dunbar, Republican Richmond. We have met the requirements of the legislation. We don't want to stifle what they, the school districts, are doing in classrooms.
So we're forcing them to do something that some of them might not choose not to do.
Well,
to show how
that,
free
they might not know how to do.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you say you have to do
Go
this.
Ahead.
It's extremely precarious. You have
yeah.
to be extremely deliberate and delicate in how you set it up. But we're not going to give you any hints.
Yeah.
I mean, schools could very easily violate the First Amendment without any ill intention. They could intend to have a good course and still fuck up.
Right. Critics contend that the board standards for the course are so vague and general that many schools might unknowingly create unconstitutional Bible classes that either promote the religious views of teachers or disparage the religious beliefs of some students. Earlier this year, the Ector County School Board agreed to quit using a Bible course curriculum at two high schools in Odessa that the American Civil Liberties Union said promoted Protestant religious beliefs not shared by Jews, Catholics, Orthodox Christians, and many Protestants.
Do they have one of those academic freedom laws here in Texas?
I don't know. Where,
I mean, I forget where that was instituted.
I think they have one on a collegiate level.
I mean, you know, laughably called academic freedom laws when it's actually
freedom from academics.
You can't mark, yeah, that's it. You can't mark a student as wrong because they say something stupid if it's got anything to do with their religion.
Right.
Right.
So, I mean, it seems like this new Bible class combined with the academic freedom rules mm-hmm. makes a great combination.
I think I actually have a problem with the fact of it being a Bible-specific course.
Right.
It's singling the Bible out in a special way. Mm-hmm. If this were a push to have, say, a course on comparative religion, and they were going to compare the Bible against the Quran and other religious texts, I'd have less of a problem with it.
Right.
But the fact that it is specifically the Bible being singled out as special, I think, is problematic.
Mm-hmm. Well, and with the class structure, leaving it up to them also puts students in a gray area. If they have, different projects that they have to do throughout the semester, even if the curriculum and the teacher are both in line with the Constitution, you let all these students get up and do their project and make speeches, you're going to get, with the kids who are going to want to take the course, two or three anti-Christian rants, and then probably about 22 proselytizations.
Sure.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't really control what the students do
you
in that
can't
case.
Control
I think
what they do,
I mean, I think it's okay if the students write like something for an English class essay that is loaded with God talk. I mean,
to a degree, but it's a matter of creating that situation with other an English class. If they write something God heavy, it's fine, but, the assignment is on something else. As long as it ties in, it's okay. This is an assignment that will very clearly bring religion into it. So you're forcing the students to go into this very controversial area. So it's a little unnecessary on a high school level.
I still think there's something to be said for the Bible as literature, and I'm speaking as somebody who went through two college-level humanities courses that mm-hmm. were both almost entirely on the Bible. And you could say, you shouldn't have that much focus in high school. I mean, you don't have entire classes devoted just to Shakespeare in high school. But I'm not going to say that it's less legitimate to have a class all on the Bible than it would be to have an all Shakespeare class.
Yeah, and I was going to kind of partially disagree with that in that schools already typically offer comparative religions courses. This is something extra.
Yeah.
And I agree that it may not actually be necessary. But I think there's a good argument to be made, I guess tying off of what Russell was saying, that if there was another book, like, for example, the Quran, I could see them offering a introductory quarter or semester on the Bible, or introductory quarter or semester on the Quran, or possibly packaging them together into a religious literature course. The comparative religion courses already exist, I mean, for the most part, and they actually have a curriculum for them.
Yeah.
But they don't go into detail enough, I think, into the specifics of any one religion. And for kids growing up in the United States that are going to deal with a culture that is so infused with the themes and ideas from the Bible, I think there may be a good argument to using it. I mean, Dawkins touches on this in The God Delusion a little bit and makes a list of the various phrases that one must have some familiarity with the Bible in order to stand. I'd be fine if most of those phrases kind of went away and were replaced by something a little more, you know, useful and realistic. But I don't know that. And I guess I'm just saying, I don't know. It would very much depend on the curriculum, which we don't frickin' have because the State Board of Education decided we're not going to bother with that little detail.
I don't know with the way they went about that, that the curriculum would even matter. The fact that they are mandating this course as opposed to any of the other numbers of courses they could mandate. They could have said every high school has to offer a logic course. Every high school, you know.
But they do that stuff.
They don't.
They do, that's what the State Board of Education does.
Well, yeah, there are some mandated courses, but there are a lot of courses that are not mandated that would be a hell of a lot more useful than a Bible study.
Now, there I agree that there are other courses they could have done.
If they had done, I think logic should be a required course in high school.
Well, you know, I mean, the way to determine this sort of thing, as I understand it, is to apply the Lemon test from Lemon versus Kurtzman. And the questions you ask, you know, correct me if I'm getting any wrong, but it's like, does it have a secular purpose? Well, that's the main one. I mean, could it, you know, is there any conceivable secular purpose that it could have?
Yeah.
And the answer to that is yes. And I'm not sure what the other components are.
But at any rate, even if it's okay to have a Bible course in a high school, it is not okay for the state to require that of all high schools while they're letting vast amounts of more useful knowledge go without any mandates whatsoever.
Yeah, but I mean, just playing devil's advocate here, if they said, okay, we can have we refuse to offer this Bible course because there are lots of things that would be more useful, that would be singling out the Bible course over the other things that they're making mandatory.
No, it wouldn't.
I don't think so, but I think there's a counter that still applies there, which is the opinion about what is more important is problematic. Yeah, I would agree with you that a logic course, critical thinking course, would be far more useful to students.
Well,
and we could make a list of them.
Right.
But you have to prioritize that list because there's a limited number of courses that you can offer.
Right.
And now we're basically saying that, personally, I'd prefer that you did any one of these other 20 or 30 things before mm-hmm. getting to the Bible.
Right.
Other people would put the Bible higher on the list.
Potentially, but there are plenty of courses that you would have an overwhelming support of. Trigonometry has not been offered in high schools in a long time on a mandatory basis. Trigonometry, when I went to high school...
We're not talking about mandatory anyway. We're talking about electives.
No, I'm mandatory that the school provides the course.
Yeah, but I'm pretty
you're
sure
telling
a school
me,
has
you're
to
You're telling me Texas high schools are not required to provide trigonometry?
It's become part of algebra... yeah, part of Algebra 2, and part of it's covered in pre-calculus.
But it's covered.
It's covered, but not in any reasonable way. It's like 6 days at the end of one course, 6 days at the beginning of another course.
Mm.
But at any rate, there are plenty of courses that if you were to just use reasonable estimation as to what the general public would want, you know, as far as mandatory courses, not mandatory to take, but mandatory for the school to offer, I highly doubt a Bible course would be in the top 10. Just among the general populace, I think there are many things that are more important. So
I think if you asked the general population and made a list of coverage that doesn't exist in high schools,
mm-hmm.
I think the Bible cracked the top 10.
I don't if it was an open-ended question and you didn't say, you know, do you want a Bible course, you know, if you didn't bring it up and you just asked what courses do our high schools
need? You couldn't have it as an open-ended question. You have to provide enough information so that people know what is and isn't covered.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we don't know what is and isn't covered because the school board refuses to say.
I'm talking about what, out of all the possible courses,
right.
Here's what we require schools to offer.
List your
top three things,
frankly,
that should be added.
And I'll go ahead and say what's been implicit so far. I think the only possible reason why they didn't specify a curriculum is because they really wanted a curriculum that would violate the Constitution.
Right.
And instead of...
And they got it.
You know, and instead of standing up and having the cojones to say, yeah, this is the curriculum we want, and then catch heat from the ACLU, they wanted to create a situation in which hundreds of individual school districts would
mm-hmm.
make those choices that they didn't want to make themselves
right.
and say, ha, try and go after them all, evil ACLU.
Yeah, bunch of frickin' cowards.
So anyway, that's pretty much all my news stories.
Uh-oh.
Any email?
How are we doing?
God, what time is we it? Got mail. We're, yeah.
It is 5:15.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We got a time yet.
Yeah, we got like have too much 15 minutes.
Yeah.
We're not going to run over today.
All right.
I realize we started late, but there's just way too much going on.
So, Reverend John Lowe writes, the subject came up in conversation about how ministers are recognized by the local government. Doctors, nurses, lawyers, police officers all undergo training, take tests, and become certified. What about ministers? Well, she said, all you need to do to become ordained, How do you do that? I asked. She referred me to the Universal Life Monastery Church, and I went online and got ordained. It was free. It only took me 5 minutes. I'm now qualified to do marriages, funerals, and even exorcisms.
Not necessarily.
And they will even send you a letter in good standing, apparently a requirement in some states to be officially recognized as clergy. The whole thing felt like something you find on the back of a comic book, usually right next to the X-ray glasses. If I send in 2 bazooka gum wrappers, I get the secret decoder ring or the cool priest's collar. I thought that was an excellent comparison.
Yeah.
Well, we know that.
You know that? All right.
Well, I mean, Matt is ordained.
But what are the exceptions
Paul
here?
Wilson is ordained.
Being ordained is not enough in most states to be able to perform a lot of these duties. You have to have a separate filing with the state. I'm pretty certain that's the case in Texas. If you have the Universal Life Church ordainment, you still have to apply in the state of Texas for another license or certification before you can perform marriages.
And you know why? Because that one costs money.
Yeah.
Which is why I don't have it.
What does it mean to be qualified to perform exorcisms anyway? I mean, well, if I did an exorcism right now, who would stop me and on what grounds?
Well, if you assaulted the person like that church did that got away with it thanks to the Texas State Supreme Court, I'd stop you, and I'd stop you by assaulting you, and then I'd go and claim that it was in defense of others.
And then the Supreme Court would smite you.
Yeah, but I mean, does the piece of paper from the Universalist Church prevent that in any way?
Well, there's no hindrance in any of the exclusively religious aspects to it. They just list that as part of what comes with ordainment. You don't have to be ordained, but it's a perk.
Yeah, it helps.
And now I've got a little letter.
The devil will be extra scared of you now because you filled out a form online.
Here's an email I'll categorize as target-rich environment. Thanks for an incredible show. I was wondering if you could give me some help. I would like to make some animated shorts that teach the horrific morals of the Bible. I will be rewriting Bible stories into a you-make-the-moral-call format. The answer will always be C. My friend will do the hard part, the animation. So here's the question. Can you direct me to the stories in the Bible that teach the most disturbing morals? Thanks. Ryan from Utah. Most disturbing moral stories in the Bible? Good grief. Pick any page.
Well,
Genesis,
the best
Exodus,
resource
Leviticus
is probably Skeptic's Annotated Bible, because you can search by cruelty and things like that. If they have not yet chosen an animation style, I would recommend, because I've been wanting to see this for a long time, follow the style of the Precious Moments Bibles. Those, you know, big kids.
That's excellent.
I have no artistic ability, but I've always wanted to write out those, you know, just do illustrations for the Elisha and the two bears.
Yeah, little
story.
Happy, smiling faces.
All being ripped to shreds.
On the ground, yes. Also, if you haven't already, and shout out to the guy who does the Brick Testament. Check out the Brick Testament, because you want to see what ground has been covered already. Because, I mean, you know, the Brick Testament is Bible scenes rendered in Legos. Yeah. And they're cute little smiling faces illustrating the creepiest verses. The verses.
Brick Testament was okay, but nothing about it felt clever. It just felt like they were one of the early ones to do that kind of thing and didn't do it especially well to me.
I like it. Between the Brick Testament and the Skeptic's Annotated Bible, there's your answer. I apologize, but I am not about to go through the Bible to give you a list. You go read the damn thing. I've read it enough.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of good information
but
at those
that was
sites.
Good advice from Schilling. You should go with the Precious Moments thing.
Yeah, that would be adorable.
Yeah. I just want to see 42 children mauled by two she-bears.
Yes.
In Precious Moments style.
The thing is that if he's looking for the what would you do morality plays, I don't necessarily know that that's the kind of story you pick.
Right.
Instead, you pick something like the story of Jephthah, where he makes a deal with God that if you allow me to win this war, I will sacrifice to you the first thing that walks out of my house when he gets home, which is pretty stupid considering that he wasn't married and he had a daughter.
I mean,
what's going to come out? So he gets home and his daughter comes out to greet him and he's like, oh, you've pained my heart because I promised God I'd sacrifice the first thing that came. What the fuck were you expecting?
Right.
So the dutiful daughter, the first moral question is, what would you do if you're the daughter? I think I'd run. But
she's
a good daughter, and she says, oh, I'm so sorry, Father, I understand, but could I at least have a couple months to go off into the woods with my friends and enjoy life for a little bit before you sacrifice me? Pretty sure she went out to get laid, but he's like, oh, yeah, do that. And so she goes off, and then she comes back, and he sacrifices her. Now,
whereas you could see that becoming like a Simpsons moment where she says, excuse me, I left something in the woods.
I think the Elisha story could work on a multiple choice morality-based thing because a bunch of kids insult you. Do you A, turn the other cheek, B, explain to them the error of their ways, or C, sick two she-bears on their asses?
It's good.
Also, you will not run out of material for a long time if you start reading the hundreds of laws in Leviticus and Deuteronomy.
Yes.
Well, hell, they could always do a Quran spinoff, so.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I talk about, usually the first atrocity in the Bible that I point to, because it is so glaring, is slavery. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't care if your God exists and he shows up in my room right now and demonstrates beyond any doubt that he actually exists. The first thing he's got to do is answer this a bunch of questions. And one of them is, is this Bible thing accurate? Did you really advocate slavery and specifically list who you could and couldn't enslave and how much you had to pay for them and how you marked them and how you got around the rules about how long you could keep people? Like you couldn't keep fellow Jews more than 7 years unless they fell in love with their wife who was still your slave and wanted to stay with you, in which case you hold their ear up to the door and drive a spike through it, and now they're your fucking property forever. Is all this accurate? Because quite frankly, I don't care if you could smite me into oblivion right now. I will not worship or revere or respect anybody who advocates owning another human being's property. It's just that simple.
Yes.
And when I make a list of things that are wrong in the Bible, I always, because I do this all the time with theists,
mm-hmm.
I always put slavery, comma, human sacrifice, comma, and then I go on with a bunch of others. And they come back, and because they're all ignorant of what's actually in their Bible, without fail, every one of them has come back and said, either there's no human sacrifice in the Bible, or clearly you mean the story of Abraham going to sacrifice Isaac, and God prevented that. Well, first of all, mm-hmm. There's the idea.
There's a big sacrifice in the New Testament, as I recall.
Yeah. True.
Yes, but that's a standing sacrifice.
Yeah. But
he was a god.
But the first of all, Abraham had to have in his head that God told me to kill my son, and it was okay. So human sacrifice would have been okay. But the Jephthah story is the one they miss, where the guy makes a deal with God and follows through on it. Nowhere does God intervene. God accepts his deal, knowing that it's a human sacrifice, and accepts the sacrifice. After Jephthah killed his daughter, where's God to step in and say, what the whoa, 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 whoa?
Nope, nowhere.
Why are you killing your daughter? Nope. There you are, God. I have provided you this sacrifice. I hope the smell of burning flesh of my daughter still pleases your nose like the sheep I sacrificed last week. It's stupid, and there's human sacrifice in the Bible, and so they don't know it.
How do they respond?
They
don't. They run away like they cowards, don't they?
They generally don't. They make
excuses. Excuse me, I left something in the woods.
That that's the Old Testament, or times were different back then, or God works in mysterious ways and we can't really completely understand all of this, or Jephthah's story is supposed to be there as a moral story to show you what not to do. No.
It doesn't matter, bitches. It was human fucking sacrifice.
You revisionist piece of crap. If it's there to teach you the lesson that God doesn't accept human sacrifice, where does it say God punished Jephthah in any way? He worked out a deal. Both parties followed through on it, and the Bible moves along. It doesn't say any. It doesn't give you any moral story that this was wrong.
Right.
Well, there's a hint of it from Jephthah's perspective, as far as, you know, be careful when you make a deal with God, because he'll nail your ass to it.
I'm going to have to be more careful the next time I go to war. Maybe I'll promise to sacrifice the fourth thing that crawls out from underneath the porch.
Yep.
Well, you can still get
in
trouble.
And if you are going to barter with God, have some sense of intelligence and start low. Work your way up to whatever God's minimum sacrifice is going to be. You suggest a gnat. He suggests your mother. You say, okay, well, how about, you know,
my mother? You must be
two
mad.
Cats and a squirrel, and you just work your way to figuring
You'll
out what's
somewhere
the appropriate.
In the middle,
yeah. So. Don't start off with, I'll give you my daughter, because then God, you know, I would have taken a sandwich, but.
Other laws in the Bible that I quite like: the punishment for rape.
Yeah.
Being to
50
that
shekels?
You must marry the girl.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Awesome. You break it, you bought it.
Yeah.
Watch out for that hymen, boys. Yeah, 50 shekels, and you got to marry her. Which, you know, I mean, that's convenient. I mean, there's all these kind of loopholes in the Bible. You see some attractive chick that you like, all you got to do is rape her. She's yours forever. And by the way, that takes place in the Bible. Guy runs over.
Yeah, that's right.
I just can't help myself, and we're going to go ahead and do this. And then they try to work out a deal, saying, hey, we want our brother to marry this girl, your daughter who he raped, but he can't do that because you guys aren't Jewish. So we need you all to get, you know, or she won't do that. So we need you to get circumcised. And then there's the whole, I'm not going to go into this.
Really, that rule has got to make for some awkward breakfast table conversations.
If only Gutenberg had been around at the time. When you have a girlfriend, you decide to propose to her, you could say, will you marry me? And if she says no, you pull out your Bible with the highlighted passage, check this. Now, do you want to marry me? We can go about this one of two ways.
Wow. All right, well, more mail. Sabrina from Florida has a question. She's having discussions with friends and family. And she says, I'm pretty comfortable with the usual apologetics arguments, but they have an odd sticking point. If Jesus existed and was who he said he was, then none of the other arguments matter. I don't even know how to go about this because they seem to want to isolate Jesus from all of the arguments that obey logic. Basically, they want him to prove that Jesus didn't exist or wasn't the living God. Of course, I always want to jump in with, well, prove that Krishna, Thor, Jesus didn't exist and or weren't gods. But somehow I think that will be lost on them. Can you maybe point me to some references that would give a good argument against the divinity of Jesus? Any help would be greatly appreciated.
It's begging the question.
No, it's shifting the burden of proof.
It is.
Yeah.
Don't buy into it. It's not your job to prove that Jesus didn't exist or that Jesus wasn't divine. It's their job to prove that he was. And if they can't offer you evidence, oh, well, sorry.
They've lost by default.
It's begging the question, though, because they're saying if Jesus existed and he really was God, then everything we say is true.
Yeah, because that's the very thing.
Well,
yeah.
Now, why can't you fucking prove that Jesus existed and was who he says he is?
I see your point. And agree.
If you overlook the inconsistencies, flaws, and idiocies within the Bible, it holds up rather well.
Right.
As a matter of fact, if you overlook those, it's the most perfect book ever written.
What, because you can carry it around in a watch pocket?
No, I mean, if you overlook all the problems with it.
Ah.
And presumably you don't overlook the problems in any other book.
Yeah.
So by comparison, it is the best book.
Yep. Or at least tied.
I don't know. Why I'm not a Christian? That's going to be tough to
Why
beat.
Why I'm not
Enumeracy
a Christian
is, a better
is
example.
Good, but it has a lot of rambling stuff, which is now kind of out of date.
Plus, there's a typo.
Yeah.
Now, should I give the usual... we have another email here.
And make this one the last one.
Oh, okay.
Unless you got like two that we want to do. Let's just
Here's useful information. From Daryl. The first step in developing the EM, oh God, now I've screwed it up, is to attend a Catholic Mass and as an observer. Take communion like everything else. Take notes of the nature of the movements that everyone makes as they accept the body of Christ.
No, we're not doing this.
We're not doing this one?
No. Aww.
I like that one. What's wrong?
Go ahead.
You should now, mention, though, that
don't
this
try
is,
this at home.
This is the reference to the Eucharist challenge
right.
that Matt brought up last
Which has
last
been canceled.
Week.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Is that the problem?
But it's
for
useful
legal
information.
Reasons.
Right. You must be able to imitate the people who do this crap every week. When it's your turn, take a good look at the cracker or wafer, flesh, whatever it is. Consume the BOC like everyone else. Now, go to the store and buy a box of crackers that looks similar enough to the real deal. Palm a cracker in your left hand as you approach the real magician, the guy making flesh of dough. Bring both hands up, palm up with the right on top, covering the regular cracker. Take the BOC cracker on the top, right hand. Now for the dirty work, which I'm sure you can work out for yourself. Bring both hands up to your mouth, but switch the fake body of Christ for the real one. Probably dropping one hand early, since I imagine both people won't use two hands right up to the mouth. That's what the observing day is for. Palm the body of Christ and visibly consume the bogus cracker. When it's safe, drop the anointed one in your pocket. You are wearing a coat with pockets, right? Now you've got a real anointed cracker with no spit and no need to pull something out of your mouth when no one's looking.
Don't do it.
Right. It's like the the atomic bomb instructions on the internet.
Hey,
you know, the information's out there.
What's the
we
problem?
Can't pull it back.
It's illegal.
Why?
Don't have time to go into all that.
Oh. Should have left more time.
Yeah, I took
That's why I said it. We didn't want to do this.
Yep. So it is illegal to swap
it is
an
apparently
unconsecrated.
It is gray
illegal. It is potentially illegal to attain a consecrated communion wafer by any means.
Well, it's apparently illegal to
whether or not you'll be charged with it's another question.
Anything but that's free by a by method of
deceit. But
that is
here's
illegal,
the real question. Apparently. You have a box of crackers and you've just stolen a consecrated one. Legally, can they prove that the one you've got is the consecrated
one? No, and that was my defense, but it may or may not matter. There's a whole rigmarole. There's actual lawyers involved. There were people talking about suing PZ. There was the possible risk that by having this Eucharist challenge, I could put the ACA in the position where we'd be receiving stolen goods. And the thing is that while this is petty theft and probably nothing that you'd ever be charged with, and they may not be able to convict you anyway, whether they go the bailment route or whatever, if they were able to convict you, they can then tack on hate crime legislation because your motivations for doing this. This is why I've been a fucking opposed to hate crime and thought crime legislation from the very beginning. Because now they can turn this thing, which may or may not be petty theft, which is something nobody should worry about because it's a fucking cracker. They can then tack on hate crime legislation, which turns it into a felony, which means trying to show how stupid some of these beliefs are for the purposes of parody or satire or amusement, you may wind up in federal prison.
Maybe the best way of doing it is to be ordained a minister and then make your own.
Actually, that would be illegal, too.
Whoa,
because the individual minister does not own the cracker. Anyway, we don't have time to get all the illegal. What do you mean, what? Does the individual minister own the dais? It's owned by the church.
You bought your own crackers.
I think they were talking about ordaining crackers that you bought, like the ones you bought the other day.
Oh, sure, but those won't count.
Jesus knows that you were just trying to fool him with your mail order.
Evidently, he didn't know Warren Cook was going to kidnap him and take him home with him. But
well, what can you expect? The guy doesn't know everything.
You'd have to have like the knowledge of a god to figure that
out.
Yeah,
really.
I mean, plus, you know, it's brilliant. This supreme creator being of the universe decides to just put himself in a cracker where he could you know, did nobody foresee this, that somebody could walk out with it?
That there might be a problem?
What do you think is going through God's mind when he gets stolen by this guy? He's like, oh, now I shall, now I shall complete the ceremony once again as I have for thousands of years. Hey, wait, what are you doing? Hey, it's dark in here.
Maybe that's what happened, though. Maybe there is a God and all this stuff is true, and in the very first communion, somebody just didn't feel like eating a cracker and stuffed him away in a drawer.
So he's been in that drawer ever since.
What Jesus wants is to pass through your digestive system, to be excreted from your anus into a toilet. That's what he wants.
No. The cracker stops being grod before you shit it out.
So there's two transubstantiations going on.
Yes.
Wow.
The host stops
being
Jesus.
I missed a whole transubstantiation.
Well, arguably,
even another miracle.
Arguably. I don't know if transubstantiation implies that the wafer becomes 100% Jesus' flesh. Is that necessarily part of it, or does it become partially Jesus' flesh?
Who cares?
But it reminds me of when Dogma came out. Not to ruin the movie, so there will be spoilers if you're listening and you haven't seen Dogma.
It's a lame movie.
But yeah,
just
it's not like there's
it.
Plot.
I love Dogma.
Sorry.
I thought it was okay, but...
It was all right.
In the story, God has a thing for skee-ball, so he manifests himself as an old man so he can go to the shore and play skee-ball. And a demon sends a bunch of his minions to put him in a coma, so he's incapacitated. Because if he dies, he goes right back up to heaven. And if you just incapacitate him, then he stays in a coma and is trapped. And the whole, Catholic outrage, I remember reading some statements from Catholics that picked that apart. God could never be trapped like that. He's all powerful. But then they turn around and Jesus is stuck in the cracker and kidnapped.
Yep.
Well, the cracker is all God, but God isn't all cracker. That's the answer. And, there's three in one and one in three.
Yeah.
And
that's pi.
Ooh.
Mysterious.
So, are we done?
We're done-ish.
We're done-ish.
We're pondering the amazing mystery.
We are awestruck at the just, I mean.
Two transubstantiations for the price of one.
I mean,
I do want to know whether it turns back from God before you start chewing it and covering it with spit.
No. It's as soon as the priest consecrates it and the bell rings, the cracker becomes the physical body of the human Jesus, not the God Jesus.
Yeah, right.
The human Jesus.
Then you put it in your mouth, and I don't know what the exact time is, but I think it's 7 minutes or something like that.
Well, I know there's supposedly a 15-minute limit.
It's 15 minutes.
If you don't eat it, there's a 15-minute limit. But most masses at a large church, it takes more than 15 minutes after he's consecrated the bowl for everyone to get through the line. So the people at the end are getting unconsecrated.
No, that's the problem, is that there is no, if it hasn't been consumed, there's no time limit, which is, if there was, then they couldn't have accused Warren of kidnapping, because as soon as he got out, it wouldn't have been.
Well, that's what I had initially heard. No.
Okay. It's 15 minutes. From the time you eat it, it's 15 minutes, I guess, until the host leaves the cracker.
How did they determine this?
They made it up.
Oh, that's right. Oh. They pulled it straight out of their ass.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
If you want to offend God, go out at night, get a bottle of gin and the spiciest chili you can find on a Saturday night. Down both. When you get to the church, you have your cracker. Odds are it's going to take less than 15 minutes for that thing to move, given the
right
the preparations.
Well, what if you actually swallowed it and then threw up?
Yeah.
Then
they have means of dealing with that, apparently.
If you choke to death on the wafer, can you charge Jesus with manslaughter?
They apparently put it in a hole in the ground. It's sort of a burial thing.
Okay.
It's insane.
All these rules to remember. You would.
Yeah, and we're supposed to know them, or we break them.
And any one person who breaks them could conceivably destroy God, or keep him incapacitated forever, or something. I mean, you thought the Chariots of Iron stipulation was bad, but that's nothing compared to all the things that could go wrong in a basic transaction
ceremony
that happens in hundreds of thousands of churches every day.
We got it. We got us some rituals.
Yep. Well, I'm going into the exit here. If I believe there was a show, then that was it. Do I believe that it will be back in 2 weeks with another episode? Only if I believe that what I just heard was real, and I don't. Why would I? It would be like believing that such people as Dennis Lube, Matt Dillahunty,
yes,
Schilling,
yes,
Thad,
Yell,
and Russell Glasser,
yo, goodbye,
exist. And that's as unlikely as God by Tori Amos existing. So I'll just wish myself goodbye then. Bye. God, sometimes you just don't come through. God, sometimes you just just in case.